1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. More brutal heat is blanketing at least 14 states today, including Arizona, where Phoenix just tied a triple-digit heat record. It's been more than 110 degrees for 18 straight days.
The heat feels like when you preheat the oven and you open it up to stick the food in, that heat coming from the oven is like the same as walking outside of your house.
At least 12 people have died from the heat this year alone in Phoenix, but the medical examiner is still looking into dozens of cases. Meantime, wildfire warnings are ramping up in California. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti is there.
Here in Riverside County, California, triple-digit heat for the rest of the week with an excessive heat advisory in effect through tomorrow evening. Cal Fire warning, a single spark could ignite another wildfire.
In Pennsylvania, at least five people have died in flash floods as rescue workers scramble to search for a baby and a two-year-old. Scott Ellis is the family spokesperson.
Our family would like to extend our deepest gratitude for the enormous efforts of so many emergency personnel who have been working tirelessly in dangerous and difficult conditions, and their commitment to bringing Conrad and Matty home is unwavering.
The U.S. is reacting to Russia's decision to basically cut the world off from crucial grain supplies from Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The result of Russia's action today, weaponizing food, using it as a tool, as a weapon in its war against Ukraine, will be to make food harder to come by in places that desperately need it and have prices rise. We're already seeing the market react to this as prices are going up.
It's possible retaliation for an attack on a key bridge linking Russia to Crimea. Actor Kevin Spacey's sex assault trial featured a high-profile witness today.
Elton John testified via video link from Monaco. One of Spacey's alleged victims accused Spacey of assaulting him as he drove the Oscar winner to John's annual white tie and tiara ball in either 2004 or 2005. But John and his husband, David Furnish, testified that Spacey only attended once in 2001. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
Kevin Bacon backed actors on the picket lines today in New York.
Not all actors are super, super high-paid actors, that they are working-class people who are trying to, make a living, and that if they don't have a living wage.
They want higher pay, residuals from streamers and studios, and limits on AI. The FBI searching for a man known as the Sticky Note Bandit. So far, he's robbed three banks around Houston dressed as a woman. Investigators say he just hands the teller a note demanding money, but they're not saying exactly how much he's stolen so far. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who pay attention to every little detail. The ones who fuss, tinker, and sweat the small stuff. Because you know the tiniest thing can make the biggest difference when it comes to keeping business moving. We get it. We're the same way. Offering access to product experts to help you quickly and easily find what you need. So whatever your industry, you know you're always getting professional-grade products. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With premium finishes and unbelievable torque, the all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya is a silent ride with all the sensations. Brimming with style and innovation, the stunningly powerful EV flaunts dual monolith screens and a lounge-like atmosphere with its elegant, spacious interior design utilizing timeless Japanese futurism. The brilliantly fierce, all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya. The EV for people who love to drive. Head to NissanUSA.com for more information. 2023 Ariya has limited availability. Contact your local dealer for inventory.
Saturdays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Partly cloudy tonight with lows around 50. Winds out of the west 5 to 10 miles per hour. A mix of clouds and sun again. Tomorrow, highs around 80. Lows level off around 55. Tomorrow night, 83. Wednesday, with a chance for scattered storms, 77. Thursday, chance for storms continues.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
Currently, it's 70.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Regular host Mark Thompson. We're here tonight with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke from the 18th District. Think of that as Milwaukee's West Side. Welcome, Representative Goyke.
Evening, Craig. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Well, can you tell our listeners just a real quick description of the 18th District and how long you've been a state rep?
Yeah, so I'm in my 11th year. The 18th District is a big chunk of the North Side, the West Side, and about 12,000 people in the city of Wauwatosa. Basically Marquette University's campus over to almost to the zoo, north of I-94, all the way up to Congress, north of Capitol. So really diverse, residential, integrated, diverse part of the city of Milwaukee.
And a lot of distinct parts of the city, different from each other too, isn't?
Yeah, definitely a unique district to represent industrial, residential, commercial, wealthy census tracts, impoverished census tracts, everywhere in between. So a lot of different issues and ground to cover. Exciting and challenging at the same time.
Absolutely. So Evan, we go back to your early days as a state public defender before you joined the legislature on a more regular basis, or were elected to the legislature. And my background as a criminal defense attorney and in and around the Milwaukee area really sets up the conversation for tonight, which I told you before the show, I wanted to focus on our city, the city of Milwaukee, and crime and criminal justice and violence prevention in the city. We've got an hour to do it. There's a lot of topics you and I can fill that time with. But maybe we'll start here. You just went through budget. You're a member of the Joint Finance Committee in the legislature. And, you know, that's a process of the governor putting forth a wish list, if you will, on a variety of policy initiatives, including crime prevention and public safety, and then a host of other issues that our state deals with. What was in there that the governor proposed, or a sampling of some of those things that were taken out by the Republicans in the legislature, that gives our listeners kind of a sample, if you will, a sample plate of how the two parties see things differently on certain issues related to crime and criminal justice.
Yeah. It's interesting you ask for a sample. So the governor's budget was introduced in the middle of February. And then in early May, after a series of listening sessions and town halls, and you know, I think we had over 1,300 people actually come and appear in front of our committee. More than 3,000 people wrote in or called into the committee itself, plus all of the other legislators, senators, and representatives hearing from those folks. So on the very first day, this is early May, the Republicans' very first action was to remove 545 items from the governor's budget, and that those 545 would never be able to be reintroduced or redebated throughout the rest of the budget process. So in that motion, you can imagine, if you're listening, 545 items from a state budget kind of fundamentally reshapes the nature of the entire budget. Now, in the world of the criminal legal system, there's a lot. There were at least a half dozen what we would traditionally call justice reform measures, how people are sentenced, how long they're incarcerated for, what opportunities those individuals would have while incarcerated, programs to help them reintegrate when coming home. So stripped, all removed. And you can think of, you know, some other part of our conversation tonight, I hope, leads into areas of like public health and environmental health equity. So there are huge amounts of public health investments that would reduce or seek to eliminate racial disparities in health outcomes. Some of that is what I was saying, like environmental health, like money to remove lead service laterals or lead paint abatement to Medicaid postpartum coverage, or public health workers out in the community to help people get enrolled and signed up for healthcare. You know, there, I would say, I'm going to go ahead and answer your next question, which was hopefully maybe going to be like, what made it to the finish line?
Sure.
That changed the justice system. So many of those kind of proactive things got removed and stripped. Some positive things did make it through the budget. Most importantly for the justice system were increases in salaries for prosecutors, public defenders, and private lawyers that help take public cases. That was deeply and desperately needed. The system was really is really struggling. You have more of a day-to-day vision from the trenches than I do, but from all accounts, we were hearing this was just really a state of emergency. And then within the correctional system, increases for guards and officers and nurses and educators, because we've heard the same thing, high vacancy rates in our state prisons.
Paul Reverso, Attorney Craig Mastantuono. We're here with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke. Yes, that last portion was what I was going to follow up with, is some of the things that made it through. And to give some perspective, I think it had been 10 plus years since those types of numbers were adjusted in terms of salaries for district attorneys, public defenders, and then the pay rate for private lawyers that contract to take cases. So they were due for an adjustment. The past 10 years were marked by a lot of people joining prosecution offices and public defender offices and just leaving after a couple of years, unable to make the finances work. I think before the numbers were raised, I think the starting salary for a public defender or district attorney was somewhere around $55,000, $56,000 a year, which is a good amount of money, but not when compared to the cost of a legal education and paying the bills and having a couple of kids and getting a life started, right?
Right. No, when I started, it was 49.9 or something like that, and I had 200 grand in debt. So it's hard to make that math work after a couple of years. You know, there's a lot that mid-career level, people really hit a difficult spot.
It is. And I think it's hard to communicate to the public, at least from a political perspective, maybe more so from a policy perspective, the importance of these offices for being able to keep talent, right? You want good prosecutors to stay. You want good public defenders to stay. And the kind of, you and I know this, Evan, but you know, let's provide some insight to our listeners. When you have good lawyers on both sides of a criminal case, the savings for the community are countless in many ways, both numerically and from a policy perspective. Do you ever talk to your colleagues about that?
Yeah, and I think it could, and I'm glad that you bring this up, because it goes even beyond the political sphere. I think people in this country have an expectation and should have an expectation. Justice is, you know, a pretty key founding principle of the United States of America. The Bill of Rights was the most fundamental criminal justice reform document ever passed by humankind up to its point, right? I mean, it's right. All about individual rights in this context. So, but that can't happen when people are overworked and underpaid, or when you can't attract and retain the top talent. Your case And it's not, you know, we sensationalize big cases, homicide cases. You see, like, Making a Murderer or some documentary about a wrongful conviction or the Innocence Project. But in reality, the justice system on a day-to-day basis is made up of little stuff: disorderly conduct, bail jumping, retail theft. And every one of those people also deserve world-class legal representation and world-class prosecution that can see through the BS and can see the truth and can work together on understanding what the best outcome is for the individual.
Yeah, and can work efficiently and creatively, right? In other words, you know, talented lawyers don't get behind on their caseload as often. You know, talented lawyers think of creative outcomes to difficult situations that benefit society, protect the public interest, and afford a person who commits an offense perhaps a chance to do better, right? And when you have less imaginative or less efficient defenders and prosecutors, my perception is that justice suffers, and that you don't have as good of outcomes where you're really considering all the factors. I think that as a defense attorney, the worst kind of prosecutor is the kind that says, "Oh, this type of case. I do the same thing in all of these types of cases. That's just what we do in these cases." And you know, every case is different, and society deserves a little bit more of an individualized consideration for cases. And so, you know, my opinion is that justice suffers when the level of talent, creativity, initiative, and energy is lowered by what you're bringing to the case from the advocates.
Yeah, and I think that the wage increase that just is taking place or just took place July 1 as the budget was signed into effect will have a meaningful impact on the talent and the type of lawyers handling these cases. I don't know, you know, I think it might be easy, again, just for the listeners to kind of ignore this or to say, it'll never happen to me. I'll never be accused of a crime. But
I get that, you know, all the time, by the way.
Yeah, when they call you to represent
or their parents.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so I think it's important to remind, this is a goal of our society to have justice, to have truth, to have, you know, this is a promise of this country, really. And it's part of the social contract in this country. And I think you see it when it suffers, and it doesn't have to be you directly as a criminal defendant or a crime victim to have to care about the high quality of legal representation we have on both sides of the criminal legal system.
No, absolutely. So we're going to wrap up this 2 minutes here into the break with finishing up kind of that statewide perspective. So I was thinking also of things, you know, that kind of illustrate the governor's vision for criminal justice in our society writ large in the state. You know, things like legalization of marijuana was included in the budget. Raising the juvenile age for prosecution back up to 18. Wisconsin's kind of an outlier in that area. You know, studying sentences and their impact, including racial disparities. These were all items that were stripped out of the budget that are kind of things that the public can understand in a very simple way. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I hope that we can, throughout the program, talk a little bit more in depth about what you call raise the age, the idea that 17-year-olds, every 17-year-old in Wisconsin is an adult for every criminal action. Texas, Georgia, and Wisconsin are the three states in America that have that policy. And I think we're going to see some progress, hopefully, on that. But yeah, marijuana, I mean, big one. I'm glad you mentioned it. Not only avoiding criminal prosecution, but, you know, generating revenue that could be reinvested.
Yeah. And so very different views. I was amazed when I saw the Senate Majority Leader say a couple of months ago, well, we may be getting around to medical marijuana, we being the Republicans, but only for pain, no faking. And it would have to be, and the quote in the paper was, like for cancer pain. And I thought to myself, gee, how do we write a law that says that? Marijuana, yes, medical purposes only, and it's got to be like cancer pain. It left me speechless. Okay, we're going to go into the break with that. I'm going to come back to that juvenile question.
You left me speechless.
that was your colleague, not mine, from across the aisle. But we'll come back.
Let's be real. Mopping is a hassle. You have to fill the bucket, pushing a wet, heavy mop around, then cleaning the mop when you're done so it doesn't grow bacteria. A hassle on top of a hassle. Try Swiffer WetJet. With Swiffer WetJet, you start with a fresh pad and cleaning solution every time. And when you're done, you just toss the pad. Swiffer WetJet,
the faster, easier, cleaner way to clean your floors.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the Central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosures.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Are you a veteran who needs assistance? Do you know a veteran who needs help? The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is here for Wisconsin veterans, their families, and their survivors. We can help connect veterans with services such as medical care, financial and legal assistance, housing, mental health services, substance use treatment, and more. For more information, please visit wisvets.com. That's wisvets.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 7.
Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuno sitting in for regular host Mark Thompson. And we're joined by Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke from the west side of the city and the east side, I guess, of portions of Wauwatosa. Is that right,
Evan? Right, right. The village and East Osa.
And we left off the discussion. I'm glad that you compared Wisconsin, our discussion on crime, criminal justice, public safety. We're going to get focused on the city of Milwaukee in a minute. But you left off our discussion talking about the fact that the adult legal age for charging someone with a crime in Wisconsin is the age of 17. And you compared us to a few other states. I'll ask you to repeat them, but Wisconsin's an outlier in that regard. And I was an attorney in the 90s. I'm dating myself a bit when during the big tough on crime era, when really we bumped up, you know, class B felonies, you know, went from 20 years to 40 years to 60 years. Fleeing went from a misdemeanor to a felony across the board. Drug penalties were increased greatly. The juvenile age was lowered from 18 to 17. And then we ended the decade with truth in sentencing, which took away discretionary parole and an indeterminate sentencing system in favor of a system where 10 years means 10 years. And doesn't matter if you're doing really good in prison, you're going to serve your 10 years for the most part, with a few exceptions that have been expanded slightly over the years. So that was the big 90s. And the juvenile age was part of that. And you talked about some other states. Give us a perspective again on that.
Yeah. And just so that listeners understand, you know, Wisconsin's experience in that era was not unique. This was a bipartisan, both kind of nationally and federally. So the federal government expanded a lot of its criminal justice system and criminal penalties, its reach. And states did across the country as well. So that kind of became model legislation that prolificated around the country. And then, you know, maybe 10 years, 12, 15 years later, states started asking, you know, difficult questions about the return on investment. Did it work, right? We kind of pushed all of these tough on crime pieces of legislation during a crime spike in the 90s. And you know, so the people are asking, well, is this working? And there's a lot of data from other places around the country that says a lot of those policies don't make us safer. Specifically for 17-year-olds, the states that I mentioned in America, there are three states, Wisconsin, Texas, and Georgia, where 17-year-olds are adults for everything, every criminal act. So that means, I mean, mom and dad, you're listening, you're 17-year-old, takes your car out of the driveway, drives down the street, you know, gets arrested for some, you know, criminal action, but, you know, booked and processed with the adults, you know, in the adult jail, in the adult prison system, which is much more punitive than rehabilitative compared to the juvenile system.
Yeah, I started representing 17-year-old high school seniors after that change in the law when I was still a state public defender. And these were my clients in juvenile court the year prior to that law taking effect. And all of a sudden, we were in adult criminal court. And I could remember even, you know, conservative, I practiced as a public defender in Waukesha County, right, for 7 years. And I remember even conservative Republican prosecutors and judges having a squeamish look on their face going, why is this Waukesha South high school senior in my adult criminal courtroom for a retail theft charge?
Yeah, and there's no real way to go backwards, right? This wasn't a discretionary decision. There's a lot of discretion in the criminal system, and you know, we can't go down that rabbit hole in even an hour, but this is a state law that says all 17-year-olds are adults. And I wanted to highlight it. I'm glad that we took a couple minutes to talk about it, because as listeners think about how to get involved and how to work on justice issues, there's a lot that has been tried in Madison that hasn't gone forward. We covered some of them, some of those policies that were advanced in the state budget or the marijuana debate. I think this fall and winter coming up, you know, from kind of September 23 on, the rumblings in the hallways of the state capitol is more and more bipartisan support to engage, you know, a bipartisan bill, Republican lead authors to return 17-year-olds to the juvenile system.
Really? I just never thought we'd be able to, you know, because in criminal justice, largely, once you, you know, raise penalties, tighten up, get tougher, however you want to call it, right? It's really hard to undo later. It's just politically almost a non-starter at every turn, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, in my 11 years, we've probably increased criminal penalties 100 times. And I can think of no example that went the other way, right? That's exactly what you're saying, Craig. It's a one-way street. With the benefit of going 47th out of 50 is that you've seen, you know, people have done it. They've tried it, and they've, you know, all of our neighboring states have done it in different ways. And so there's a lot of really compelling evidence out there that says this is going to make us safer, not less safe, that the recidivism rate, the rate that those juveniles, 17-year-olds reoffend, is less when you take them through the rehabilitative juvenile system than through the more punitive adult system.
Yeah, it only makes sense. And I have quite a bit of experience in juvenile law myself that indicates the same, just anecdotally. We're going to head into the break in about a minute and a half. I want to again focus the conversation to our city. Let's set that up by telling our listeners that you are engaged in another race that doesn't involve your office as the 18th District State Representative. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, back in December of 22, I announced my candidacy. The election is in April of 2024. I am a candidate and seeking the office of city attorney, which is a citywide elected position in the city of Milwaukee. Only a handful of municipalities elect their city attorneys. Milwaukee is one of them. We can get into more of the detail, but really important job. Essentially, the head of the law firm that represents the city of Milwaukee, about 35 lawyers, handling a whole bunch of different responsibilities, legal responsibilities for the city. And public safety does intertwine with that office in a pretty important way, which we can cover.
Yeah. So, you know, human resources, you know, employment law, zoning, real estate development, public work.
Just the sexy stuff. Yeah.
That's all advised, but also Department of Neighborhood Ordinance Enforcement, right? And so every type of non-criminal citation is prosecuted in the city of Milwaukee by the city attorney's office, right?
That's right.
And so where that brushes up against crime, criminal justice, nuisance abatement, maybe thrown in, and some other issues, let's pick up the conversation on the other side of the break. We're here with State Representative Evan Goyke on the Paul Revere Show, Craig Mastantuono sitting in for Mark Thompson, talking crime, criminal justice, and public safety.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go.
I just can't.
I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
One in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes, their age, the way they speak? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a single father of two who works
three part-time jobs and still can't put enough food on the table?
Or maybe a mother who cleans offices at night,
hoping to find meeting leftovers to take home to her hungry family?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life. But for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Partly cloudy tonight with lows around 50. Winds out of the west 5 to 10 miles per hour. A mix of clouds and sun again. Tomorrow, highs around 80. Lows level off around 55. Tomorrow night, 83. Wednesday, with a chance for scattered storms, 77. Thursday, chance for storms continues. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Vujcicki. Currently, it's 70.
Pandemic that many states across the country, most cities, saw in violent crime, particularly homicides. My perception as a practitioner of criminal law is that mental health as a whole, the mental health of our community and communities suffered greatly, the collective mental health, and that tends to elevate everything from disputes to domestic incidents to other crime-related occurrences. Then we had within all of that, the murder of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter movement, and a lot of the marches and protests and fallout from that. And by fallout from that, I mean, police community relations and what that movement and its response did, to that. So, what do you see around our block? And I'm not going to ask you, at least at this point, to relate it to the city attorney, the office of the city attorney. I mean, I think you've developed an expertise in your time as a state rep and prior to that as a public defender, as someone focused on criminal justice issues. So what are you seeing as a representative of our city?
Yeah, I would say, you know, one of the hardest parts of this discussion in the realm of politics, in the political sphere, is that everybody, and this is not, you know, this is a curse to the politicians, everyone wants an easy answer. What's the thing? What's the bill that we can pass? How, and sometimes that manifests itself into higher penalties, like we were talking about before the break. If we just made this tougher, the behavior will stop. And, you know, so people want a quick, easy fix to an intensely complex and difficult to solve problem. And so I guess my first answer to the perspective is this is really hard. And no one elected person has the answer, because we're dealing with people that have complexities and different, you know, issues. And it's not just one thing. Where I have gravitated, I have been elected and a representative in the north side, west side of Milwaukee now for a decade. And I have watched neighborhoods win and lose the fight to reduce crime and to keep that reduction down. And I have become a true believer in the kind of quality of life. There's an author named Patrick Sharkey who came to Milwaukee, and he talks about guardians. And sometimes police officers are guardians, and sometimes abuela, or like the matriarch or patriarch of the block, is the guardian. Sometimes it's an ambassador from the Near West Side Partners that kind of walks the street and shows that people are watching and declares the block not the place to engage in criminal activity. And we have lost a lot of those guardians, and we don't invest in those guardians. And some of them work for the government, and some of them absolutely do not work for the government. So I'll give you an example of a neighborhood in my district that I think really exemplifies the victory that can be made when you look at crime holistically. And that's Washington Park neighborhoods. Roughly around Washington Park, makes sense, the north side, Lisbon Avenue on the north, Fleet Street on the south, 40th to 35th, roughly. High crime neighborhoods statistically, you know, diverse, residential, low home ownership, high poverty rates. And for 3 years, this neighborhood got a grant from the federal government. And really what they did from the grant is they just broke down the walls so they could see each other. It was a nonprofit that led the grant, a lot of community meals. They brought police in to do kind of the beat cop patrol. They brought the landlords that own the rental properties to the table. They brought the churches, the nonprofits. They brought Habitat for Humanity to do, you know, improvements to homeowners that couldn't afford the improvements. And so they're tackling crime. It wasn't like we're going to go get crime. It was just let's get to know each other and let's kind of address challenges as we see them. And crime went down 29% in 3 years.
Wow.
Was there still crime? Yes.
Of course.
But a meaningful change. And then you know what happened? The grant goes away.
Yeah. Right?
I don't think that, you know, some of those investments have lasted. I don't think the crime rate in that neighborhood today is where it was before that effort, but it did creep back up. But I say that example to tell listeners that we can absolutely reduce crime in any neighborhood in the city of Milwaukee, but it can't just be the Milwaukee Police Department. It can't just be the city attorney or the district attorney. It has to be a much more holistic approach that addresses, you know, these layers of quality of life issues.
We are the Paul Revere Show. We're talking with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, Craig Mastantuono filling in for Mark Thompson, regular host. By the way, if you're using the Civic Media app, we're getting your texts, and please keep them coming. We will try to respond to them, and we appreciate them. So, at the beginning of your remarks, I was thinking to myself that it certainly is a truism, I believe, in our business of criminal justice, that healthy communities, you know, and describe healthy, insert a number of adjectives here, do well on these issues. You know, healthy communities have people on the street, people that aren't afraid to walk the street, people that aren't afraid of, you know, engaging with their fellow citizens. They have thriving businesses. They have homes that are inhabited by people raising children. They have schools that hopefully at least are safe at a basic minimal level. And, you know, and when you go up from there, that do better academically. It, you know, I mentioned that I started off my career as a public defender in Waukesha County. Guess what? We had crime in Waukesha County. We had lots of crime in Waukesha County, or I wouldn't have had a job. And there wouldn't have been five devoted branches to criminal courts out of the 12 branches in Waukesha County, if you include the juvenile branch. And so it wasn't lost on me that places with a lot of resources still have people that make knuckleheaded decisions that affect their lives and affect others. But when you pull resources out of a community and you fail to invest in those communities, you just have an exponentiation of the problems that plague, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes what I've seen can happen is that residents can lose faith. And then that kind of social fabric falls away when the people that, you know, usually are those kind of guardians, as somebody else would call them. But, you know, you can kind of, I think listeners picture in the mind, those people that are really community leaders. Like, let me give you an example. There was a homicide a few blocks from my house about a week ago, maybe 5 days ago. And our community, I live in the historic Concordia neighborhood just west of Marquette. The discussion that is happening right now amongst neighbors is really kind of what can we do? And you know, I think people are realistic that, you know, will the solution solve every crime or prevent every crime? No, but it's something. And so kind of restoring what were once going on, you know, kind of pre-pandemic, like structured neighborhood walks. And that's a little tiny thing at dusk to go out and, you know, kind of walk the neighborhood. But the conversation now, this week that's going on is about engaging residents that aren't walking, or, you know, we have some large apartment buildings that, you know, like, how do we diversify this conversation? And I'm just so inspired by the intentionality that these neighbors are going about, okay, this tragedy happened. Instead of being scared, instead of running away or building a higher fence, they are actually saying, how do we get to know the people around us better? And how can we, longtime homeowner in the neighborhood, bring new people in so that we know each other and in that way see each other more and actually improve safety?
And who is the alder or alders that you work with in your district?
I overlap several. Alderman Bauman is mine in my neighborhood here and a neighbor of mine. Alderman Murphy, Stamper, Rainey, and a host in Wauwatosa that I don't know well enough to name yet. There's an intersection with city government too. We talked about the race for city attorney. Part of that, the importance and where the city attorney intersects public safety, as you were mentioning, the kind of code enforcement. A lot of these neighborhoods, you ask that guardian on the block, what's the problem property?
It's they that can, building.
Yeah, they can point to it. They know because they live there and they deal with it. And, you know, in the last couple of years, it's my opinion, we've had a city attorney that hasn't been responsive enough to those concerns. And when people call and they call and they call and they go to the meeting at the church down the street and they raise their concerns and nothing is done, there is a certain point of fatigue that sets in and the guardians quit. And when that happens, that social fabric falls away and you see problems elevate.
Yeah, so basic participation in civic life, right, is a kind of almost a conditioned precedent to having a healthy and thriving neighborhood. And at its best, where I see criminal justice and kind of municipal law enforcement functioning at its highest, You know, you have a police department that can reach out to an attentive city attorney's office that has community prosecution units that can talk about that building and talk about whether to approach it from a nuisance abatement, kind of, you know, attacking the so-called slumlord perspective or individual citation enforcement. That, you know, assistant city attorney can have access to the community prosecutor assigned to the police district at the state district attorney level in case something needs to be investigated and elevated to a state criminal prosecution. And everybody's talking, right? And they're talking with people like you and the alders involved to get that information back to citizens. And, you know, I don't know, in my perspective, it doesn't seem like that's so insurmountable for offices to achieve.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's a big city, and it's hard when you think about taking that to every neighborhood and every block. But that's just part of the job. That's just what you do. You just show up and you give
it. I'm from Chicago, Evan. That shouldn't be hard to scale up here in Milwaukee. Right?
No, it isn't. I don't think it is. And look, not every intervention that we're talking about, not every example leads to some front page headline lawsuit or you know, receivership action by the city attorney or criminal prosecution by the DA, but showing up and trying and listening and being that civic participation. When people feel abandoned by their local leaders, they then, I think, can kind of turn and abandon the effort. And so yeah, I see that. I've seen it turn around and I've seen it fall apart. And I think one of Milwaukee's greatest crime reduction strategies is just doing exactly what we've talked about. And it is kind of the blocking and tackling of good governance, but it goes a long way.
Yeah, I mean, something you said touched me, which was, you know, headline cases aren't where, you know, macrocosmic criminal justice and neighborhood safety is won or lost. It's on the 15 cases a week that involve what to do about the dude dealing drugs down the street. That's pretty low level dealing, how to handle that case. I mean, people say to me, look, I saw you in the paper on a case. And I always say, when I'm doing my best work, nobody's in the paper. Right. Nobody ever finds out that there was ever even a case. Right. And that's because we resolve a lot of things in the criminal justice system before they even get charged, or affording people an opportunity to move through their bad decisions through a deferred prosecution or a diversion agreement where they do the drug treatment, they gain employment, they pay the restitution, or they do what they need to do to get through their bad decisions, and they're given back a chance to walk a healthier path. And, you know,
less likely to do that offense again. And most, in my experience, most kind of constituent calls aren't about a homicide. It's about the garbage cleanup or the house that's run down or the landlord that's a problem. You know, they aren't front page stories, but they are in the lives of those key guardians on the block.
So we got one more segment with State Rep Evan Goyke. Evan, when we come back, I want to talk about two things that it relates to the city attorney's office, which is one, police culture and training and, you know, best practices training for our police department, and then neighborhood development and where the office touches that. We're here with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke on the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuno filling in for Mark Thompson. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
We all make promises, big and small, tested over time and distance, tried by circumstances and decisions.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
I do solemnly swear to bear true faith and allegiance.
To help you when you're in need.
To tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
To be considerate and caring. Courageous and strong.
For better.
For worse.
In sickness and in health.
To love and cherish.
To be your loving, faithful friend.
Partner,
child,
parent,
neighbor.
One of our most important commitments is to support our nation's veterans. Learn how you can help a veteran going through a difficult time by visiting maketheconnection.net.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Stay. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 70 degrees.
This is Craig Mastantuono hosting the Paul Revere Show. Mark Thompson is the regular host. I'm sitting in for him tonight. We've got with us Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, Wisconsin's 18th district and candidate for City of Milwaukee City Attorney. And that would be in the spring of 2024. Is that right?
Right.
So we've got a shorter time here, and I want to wrap up with a couple of areas where criminal justice, public safety relate to the city attorney's office specifically. First is And this may take us out just tackling this topic, but the very small topic of police culture and training. So the city attorney's office, first of all, staffs the Fire and Police Commission with an assistant city attorney. And that body, due to the recent changes and the coming out of the budget crisis, has not as much of a policy making role as it did. And we don't need to get into a discussion of that. But ACAs, assistant city attorneys, advise the Fire and Police Commission. And I think of the city attorney's role as it relates to the Milwaukee Police Department in two ways: advising on best practices to prevent corporate liability for the city of Milwaukee. And when we talk about police, we're talking about constitutional policing and policing in a way that avoids liability for you and I, the taxpayers of the city of Milwaukee, in damage judgments. And then advising on, you know, a variety of other employment issues, but specifically recruitment, so that the culture of the department is affected. I'm not going to say positively, negatively, but recruiting and culture affect basically a department and its relationships with the community. And I just see those at an all-time kind of low coming out of 2020. And there's bright spots, but my interactions with a lot of police department officers lead me to think that they're leaving our city in droves, that they have a bit of a resentment with regard to being called into question as it relates to racial effect by policing in our city, and that we have a community that doesn't necessarily trust the officers that they're dealing with to investigate crime around them. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it there's a lot there to unpack, Craig.
Sure.
I certainly feel and have heard some of those same frustrations. I don't, you know, they're clearly not universal, right? It's hard to label an entire department the size of the Milwaukee Police Department as all one or the other. But those trends, I think, are your perceptions are not inaccurate. So that listeners understand, the city of Milwaukee is self-insured. So, you know, as Greg was talking about the role of the city attorney and in your kind of risk management is a key piece, because if there is a violation or deprivation of civil rights or harm, we pay. I mean, that in a civil courtroom, money is the language of resolution, right? So what we are talking about here is financial compensation for you know, wrongdoing. And the city attorney's role is really important in really mitigating that. And what I think, Craig, where you were going, where I like your corporate lawyer analogy, which is in essence, if the city of Milwaukee was insured by some insurance company, their attorneys would be providing their client the same type of advice that we need from the city attorneys, the same kind of role from the city attorney's office to say, here are our best practices. Here is how you conduct yourself as a law enforcement officer to avoid liability.
Here's how we avoid liability so that our citizens or our corporation doesn't have to pay out money when things go bad. Every corporation does that, right? And cities are no different. And I look at it as, you know, a comprehensive training program that in the way I envision it involves, first of all, the city attorney's office. Secondly, the district attorney's office, which is more of an expertise on constitutional policing and police citizen encounters. And then private providers, if appropriate, including people like myself, or retired law enforcement, et cetera, to, you know, kind of get the training program at least to a point where officers know where the lines are that they can and can't cross.
Yeah, and this is not to suggest that the city attorney's office should be responsible for training all aspects of the police department.
No.
Or that are, you know, but it is an important piece of the education and training officers have and should have. And, you know, it's not to say that they don't have any liability training. And I think the conversation that we've had tonight about public safety is to, in my role or hopeful future role as city attorney, is to make sure that you're at the table and part of the collaboration. I mean, what I was talking about earlier about healthy, low crime neighborhoods, it's not just the police. They are a part of the solution. They can't be the only piece. A city attorney is not the only solution, but they're a part. So you have to interact with these different governmental entities in a really meaningful and collaborative way. Now, in the case of the city attorney and the police department, you have this important financial relationship as it relates to the city budget and paying out lawsuits. This is good for the taxpayers, right? It's good to avoid costly lawsuits. It's good for the police department to avoid getting sued. It's good for residents to not have the deprivation of rights that would be the grounds to the lawsuit. It is a win, 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 win. And it's all just about the kind of restoration and reparation of this relationship between the public and local unit of government that we've talked about a lot tonight.
And restoring trust. Now let's move to culture, because look, as the saying goes, culture eats training for breakfast, right? So you can have all these great training programs, but if you have people that are involved in departments that, and again, we're painting with a broad brush. I'm old enough to have educated when I was teaching at Carroll University, now police detectives with Milwaukee Police Department, and now in my role as an adjunct faculty member at Marquette Law School, having current prosecutors have come through my class and defenders. And so I have a lot of friends among those groups, but it is my perception that you can affect the culture of a department by focusing on who do we want to hire. So that guardian analogy that you were making earlier, you know, that came out of the police and law enforcement movement. Are we warriors or are we guardians, right? As it relates to how we patrol our city. And, you know, do you see a role for the city attorney's office, at least in advising, you know, on maybe other models that are working elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have every intention of not burying myself in the top floor of the annex somewhere. Yeah, I'm not, you got to be out there. And that includes riding along, that includes walking the neighborhood, that includes listening to all sides involved, and also paying attention to what's working in other places. Just because it happened in Baltimore doesn't mean we do the exact same thing. The exact same outcome happens in Milwaukee, but it means we should pay attention to what they're doing. You know, we should challenge ourselves and the status quo here to always be seeking evidence and following that evidence to what that best practice is. Starts with listening, Craig, right? A lot of this is just kind of, what is the tone? What is the culture? What is that? What's the feeling on the block? And you know, we have a lot of experts right here. You know, I've talked about them as guardians, the little old lady that knows everybody's business on the block. A lot of people have a lot of expertise in our own community. That we just have to, you know, break down those barriers and listen to what they're saying.
It is a part of any healthy city to address these topics. And I agree with you. There's no one fix. It's been a great discussion. You and I could roll right into a second hour talking about crime, criminal justice in our city. But thank you for coming on tonight. Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, 18th District and candidate for Milwaukee City Attorney. I will be back and filling in for.
What if one day you went to your secret hiding place, you know, that spot that only you know about, and instead of what you came for, you found something a little different? What if instead of your private stash, you found a simple phone number, 1-800-662-HELP? What would you do? Would you stop and give it some thought? Would you make the call? The truth is, all drug use comes with risk. Before those risks become real, before drugs turn your life upside down, before drugs take their toll on you and your family, know that there is help. You can quit. If you or someone you love is struggling with drug use or prescription drug misuse, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, or go to samhsa.gov/thereishelp.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.